This is the Creative Sports Podcast.
What's going on? It's Karina Anglada back again with another Sports Creative Podcast episode. We are celebrating Women's History Month, and I have an incredible conversation with the one and only Natalie Hendricks. It's an amazing conversation, so sit back, relax, and enjoy the show.
I think we're recording now.
I'm so excited.
Recording now.
It says my time is exact.
Your time is exact. What seconds are?
I'm at 12, 13, 14.
Okay, so we're going to go at 24.
Okay. I went too soon.
That's so much better.
I got excited. I went too soon.
So much better. No.
It was terrible.
It was actually good. That was great.
Oh, jeez.
In the previous one, we were a few seconds behind. But yes, that was pretty good.
Okay, I feel way better.
Hey, everyone. Welcome to the show. My name is Garrett Wright. I want to start out with a big thank you to APM Music for donating the tracks we use on this podcast. Also, a reminder that this podcast is an extension of the sports creative community on Slack, so if you're hearing this and not a member of that community yet, you should head over to sportscreativeslack.com and sign up for free.
Welcome to the Creative Sports Podcast. My name is Karina Anglada, and I am so excited to welcome our guest, Natalie Hendricks, currently director of content with the Atlanta Hawks, and my good friend. Natalie, how are you?
I'm doing great. Thanks for inviting me out today to join your debut on the podcast.
Yeah, I'm super excited to host and also excited, like I said, to be on this with a friend. You know, you and I met several years ago at a work conference, and I feel like, you know, this industry can feel big, but at the same time, it's really small. So I'm curious, you know, everyone's sports journey has started differently, but where was your first start in sports and where did your journey begin?
I guess my first start in sports was really just playing sports growing up. I was a very active kid, so pretty much any sport that I could get into, I was willing to play. T-ball, soccer, you know, and then all the way up, once I got to high school, played golf competitively, pole vaulted. I was on the boys wrestling team, and then played one year, my senior year of basketball. So really hands in everything, also a big skateboarder. So a lot of different athletic endeavors.
That's amazing. I was going to say, I did not know that about you. And I feel like, you know, we do start young. I played basketball growing up. That was like my first, you know, foray into organized sports, but you did just about everything. So when did you kind of transition from knowing that you liked to play sports to thinking, oh, maybe this could be a career?
I guess once I got a job in sports, I don't know. I didn't ever anticipate working professionally in sports growing up. I grew up in a rural town in Southern Illinois. So the closest professional sports were 2.5 hours away in St. Louis, Missouri. I didn't really have access to understand that there were corporate jobs in professional sports.
I love that. I feel the same way. I didn't realize until I was in college, actually, that this could be a career, if anything. I kind of fell into it myself, you know, with an internship in college. And, you know, even then, I wasn't sure if I could, you know, make it, so to speak, in the industry. But when it comes to video production, I feel like, you know, we all start somewhere too. Where were your beginnings when it comes to video production? And did you fall into it? Did you like love it immediately? Did you grow into it? What was your journey like there?
I definitely didn't love it immediately. So I went to undergrad in Southern California at the Claremont Colleges and studied media studies, but it was definitely more from a theoretical perspective, you know, breaking down film structure and understanding, you know, all the implications and storylines that go into filmmaking, but didn't do a ton of hands-on work. It's a liberal arts college, so sports were not the main focus there. I went to play golf and then ended up quitting my freshman year to play on the rugby team. But again, there wasn't a lot of sports media in the colleges that I went to. So after graduating, I floundered like many undergraduate individuals do, trying to figure out what they want to, you know, where they want to go next, what's the next stepping stone. And I moved to Denver, Colorado to take prereqs for physical therapy school. As a media studies major, I did not take biology, chemistry, anatomy and physiology. And so, you know, I moved to Colorado, went to a community college and took those courses and decided that I absolutely did not want to be a physical therapist. And so I moved back to California and worked as a personal trainer and started studying for the LSAT 20 to 30 hours a week for 6 months and thought that law school was going to be my next venture. And then after about 6 months of studying, you know, my interest was wavering and I moved back to Illinois, took the LSAT still just to, you know, check that off the list. I'd already signed up and I was looking for my next curiosity is the best way I can put it. I coached CrossFit and Olympic weightlifting for a couple months and decided that a master's degree could be another, you know, avenue for me to explore future careers, and decided that I wanted to either do gender and women's studies or an MFA or maybe sports studies, which is what I ended up deciding on is getting a master's degree in sports studies, which is a lot of sports management as well as psychology and sociology. And I was fortunate enough to get an assistantship. And so I was teaching classes during my master's degree, paid for my tuition. And, you know, I got to teach undergraduate classes while also getting my degree. And I taught kinesiology 101, which is hilarious because I had never taken kinesiology 101.
Wow. So I was, oh my gosh,
you know, learning. Yeah. So I was teaching two sections of that, about 50 undergraduate students. And so I was doing my graduate studies, my readings, my homeworks, and then also doing the kinesiology 101 reading and homework so that I could teach 50 people a couple of days later all of the material that they needed to learn. So it was really an exercise in ultra learning of, you know, the materials that I needed to be a expert on. So that was really fascinating to go through that experience and has certainly been a transferable skill to this point. But during the summer of my master's degree, I really wanted to get an internship at a sports organization. You know, my mind went to Nike, Adidas, Reebok, something of that caliber. And nobody that I knew had any connections into those organizations. But one of my advisors did have a connection at the American Junior Golf Association, and they were looking for a video producer as an intern. And I wasn't that interested in the internship, but I went ahead and, you know, did an interview just to make good on, you know, the kindness of my advisor going out on a limb for me. Mm-hmm. And then without having any other real prospects in the pipeline, decided to eventually take the offer that they had given me to be a video production intern over the summer. And, you know, that really kicked it off. I spent the entire summer traveling around the United States to different golf tournaments and, you know, making up to about 100 videos over the summer without any previous knowledge of Premiere or really any of the cameras that I was using.
Okay. First of all, that is incredible. And I feel like the line of we start somewhere is when we are beginners at some point or another is your story. First of all, I love the amount of different interests that you had, right? Kinesiology, psychology, sports studies. I feel like your journey is not the average journey for a lot of people. And I love that you, A, leaned into your advisor, right? Even though being unsure of like, I'm not fully feeling this gig, but I think relationships are so important. And I'm curious, you know, if you could go back in time, would you have changed any part of your journey? Because I think, you know, a lot of creatives kind of get stressed out about knowing where they are going to go next or knowing what focus they need to have. Do you have any regrets, like looking back? Because I love your the diversity of your interests were incredible.
Yeah, I definitely don't have any regrets. My personal motto that I have, you know, kind of taken from my mom is that nothing is wasted. And she's told me that since I was a child, that everything that you do is adding up to something, you just don't know it yet. And so every time, every moment in my life where I felt really restless or uncertain, and, you know, I think all of us have that inside of us, it's the anxiety of, you know, how am I going to get where I'm going? And when will I feel like I'm there? And every time I kind of hit those moments of anxiety, my mom would just say, nothing is wasted. You're adding all of these skills that you don't know why you need yet, but you're going to need them. And so studying for the LSAT, going and getting, you know, some prereqs for physical therapy school, teaching CrossFit and Olympic weightlifting, getting a master's degree, interning as a video producer, you know, all of these little pieces are part of a puzzle that I can't see yet. But, you know, I encourage people to really follow their curiosity, even if it doesn't make sense right now. You know, I did not have a plan for my master's degree in sports studies. I didn't know where that was going, but I knew I wanted a deeper understanding of the representation of women in sports media. That was the that was kind of my key point of going to get this master's degree. And that doesn't lend itself to a lot of jobs. There's not really an in conclusion to the representation of women in sports media.
Sure.
But I just wanted to have the opportunity to go deeper into that. So for the folks out there who are in the floundering stages that I was in for years of my life, and you know, I still think that I hit those moments of floundering, it's good to just keep moving forward, keep trying stuff, keep being curious, because you don't know how it's all going to add up.
I love that. And I echo what you said about still feeling like you're in that floundering phase. I think we all experience that, but we just, you know, don't always share it with one another. I love what your mom shared with you. And I think that is a lesson for all of us. So thank you for sharing that with us. And I loved how you said, you know, it's a part of a puzzle that you just can't see yet. I think we get so locked into what we think we should do or be or where our journeys should go. And, you know, there's question marks along the way. Like, none of us know how to tell the future. But from when you were with the American Junior Golf Association, you know, you mentioned not knowing or having like the skills, right, for that position and kind of learning on the fly. What was that process like? Because I feel like, you know, at least for me, there are so many days where I still have this imposter syndrome, even though I've been in the industry for years and years now. So what was it like looking back, you know, learning things on the fly?
Yeah, I think I was prepared to learn things on the fly because I had practiced that skill set. I think it's a transferable skill that as you get comfortable with it, it's going to serve you for the rest of your life, no matter what domain you find yourself in. So learning to be a professor of kinesiology when I had not taken kinesiology, you know, learning all of these skill sets along the way, teaching CrossFit, teaching Olympic weightlifting, you know, I think it just set me up to have the internal capacity to handle uncertainty, as well as be an excellent researcher of ideas and concepts. So, you know, getting to Braselton, Georgia, they didn't have any full-time video producers on staff. So as an intern, there was nobody there to teach me. It was really a self-study. And so I had to, get the gear that they had I was unfamiliar with. So I started reading the paper manuals of the equipment that come along with the equipment.
Yeah.
They had a lot of really good information in the manuals, as we're probably not surprised, but I just don't think people take advantage of that. And then obviously diving into really rigorous self-study on YouTube. YouTube was a goldmine for everything I needed to learn. And I was learning in a way that was doing. I think we take for granted the value of actually doing something. When we go to school, it's very theoretical or removed, and you're just listening and you're not applying that skill set really in real time and getting the feedback of, oh, that didn't work, or this broke, or, you know, all of these really tactile in real time responses to what you're doing. And so you know, having the opportunity to have to learn something while I had a product to deliver was the best way I can think of for learning the art of video production.
I love that. And I don't think I've ever read a manual for a camera now that you mention it. And I think I'm missing out because there's probably I probably could have saved myself a lot of time. But like you said, you know, hey, you have to go through everything and nothing is wasted. So I love that. And, you know, now you're working with the Atlanta Hawks. So you transitioned from golf to the NBA. What was that process like, and what led you to where you are now as director of content?
So I worked for the American Junior Golf Association as the video production manager, which was really just a single person in video production. So I got my hands on everything. I was producing, shooting, editing, learning After Effects, you know, did School of Motion. So I really got a well-rounded sense of what all the aspects of video production were and what it entailed from a hands-on perspective. And then when the opportunity arose at the Hawks, it was for a production manager role, and it had never been created yet. So when I applied, I had applied to a senior editor position that required 5 years plus of experience, but I figured I'd throw my hat in the ring, which I don't think, you know, a lot of people typically won't apply for things that they don't feel, especially women, don't apply for things that they don't feel they're qualified for. Mm-hmm. And so I hope that this story encourages folks to take a shot or try and find a way into a role that or a company that you're really interested in. So I applied for a position that I did not have the background or the years of experience for. But fortunately, Matt Bunting, who is my boss still, wanted to learn more. I had a friend at the American Junior Golf Association who had applied online for a web development job at the Hawks. And, feels rare these days, but he got the job from just applying on the internet. So Amazing. It does happen. And I asked him if he could put in a good word for me with the hiring manager for this role. And he said, I've only been here a couple of months. I don't really know anyone, but I'll send an email. Kudos again to Matt, who's been a huge influence in my growth. But he called me up and just kind of did an informal interview and understood that I had skill sets that, you know, would be transferable. And he said, there's a job that I'm creating, but it's not posted yet. Do you want to interview for that? And I said, yeah, absolutely. And he didn't tell me what the job was, but I came in for an interview and he just started asking me interview questions. So it'd be like, would you consider yourself an organized person? And I would be like, yes. Would it be beneficial for me to be an organized person? You know, and just trying to figure out on the fly exactly what kind of skill sets I needed for this mystery job that I didn't even apply for. But it worked out. You know, fortunately, I got the position as production manager of content and really worked on a operational level of getting the request, being the liaison between the departments, making sure all of the deadlines were set, assigning the creatives to those deadlines, and then delivering those pieces out externally and getting the feedback for revisions. And so really understanding the business from an operational standpoint. And just through that, spent a lot of time understanding the Hawks organization as a whole, cultivating the relationships with all the different departments. I cannot stress that enough. I know creative, sometimes we get really insular and do a lot of the creative work without necessarily networking within the organization. But those are the relationships that are really going to set you apart from other people and make you invaluable. So, spent a lot of time doing that, got promoted to senior manager of content, where I worked on more content development and strategy, helping corporate partnership sell ideas for, for our contracts. And then, you know, at the 4.5 year mark, got promoted to director of content. Now I oversee the producers, editors, and we're currently hiring for a senior motion graphics designer. So if you're out there, please apply.
I love it. That is incredible to hear about your growth within the same organization, because I think you know, that's another challenge of the sports industry is, right, climbing the ranks, so to speak, often requires a move or jumping from place to place. It sounds like you, I think it speaks volumes about you that you've been able to grow within the organization and they've seen that growth within you. And it also speaks volumes about the Hawks. So I love that. And, you know, you mentioned a few things that really just resonate with me. One of them being that you just kind of applied for positions that you felt like you didn't have the background for. And I know, like, historically, women more often than not, they will look for 100% of the qualifications and making sure that they hit every box that's on that job description before they can apply. But I love that you gave that advice to all of us. And I think that's, it's not just for women, but if the ladies are listening, like, go for it, right? Absolutely. Like, I think I'm in a similar position where, you know, I spent 10 plus years working in sports production, and now I'm in a completely different role with Adobe where I'm essentially working in business development. And don't get me wrong, there's some days that I'm like, wow, this is a lot. And I'm learning so much and it feels like I'm floundering, you know, so to speak, day to day. But, you know, I got really lucky with my role, my current role, because it's still related to video production, right? I'm working with our video products at Adobe, but I didn't at first think that it was the role for me. So I loved what you said there about, you know, even if you don't have the background, like, still go for it. I'm curious, even in your roles right now, do you still feel that way? Even though you've worked with the Hawks for a long time, do you still feel like there are things you just kind of have to go for or figure out on the fly? Is that still that learning, that love for learning, does it still, you know, exist in your day to day?
Yeah, I guess it's funny that you say that. So I'm currently finishing my second master's degree. I'm getting my MBA at Georgia Tech. So I graduate May.
Amazing.
So yeah, absolutely. A love of learning persists. During COVID, you know, we were really busy on the content front, trying to make all of this at home virtual content. But there was also a lot of sitting time, as I think everyone, you know, feels, where it felt like everything stopped moving. And for me, a solution to that was, you know, learning. And I've always been a little bit curious about getting my MBA, and business is not something that I had also a lot of background in. So finance, accounting, economics, all of these foundational principles of business hadn't been in the curriculum for media studies and physical therapy and the LSAT and my master's in sports studies. And so I just, you know, made the call that an MBA would be a new opportunity for me to expand my skill sets. And so I applied to Georgia Tech, and I am, you know, just past the 2-year mark in my last semester and concentrating in product and service innovation. So yeah, learning is the best.
That is amazing. I am so inspired by you because, like I said, I feel like I don't know that many sports creatives that that have decided to pursue higher education. And it also reminds me, you know, fun fact about myself that I think a lot of people don't realize is I also have a master's degree in library and information science, right? In my day-to-day work, am I using it? Not all the time, but it actually was really helpful in my interviews with Adobe. You know, I mentioned that I have my master's degree, and at the time I was working at the University of Illinois full-time and a full-time student. I was working still in the athletics department and doing all of those things. And I think that really resonated with, you know, the folks that were interviewing with me, because I think it demonstrates, A, what you said, that love of learning. It also demonstrates drive and dedication and focus, right? Like, it's a lot to continue, you know, your academic studies. But what's interesting and a common theme I'm hearing from you is that you're very driven by curiosity.
100%.
So what other than curiosity drives you day to day? Like, what drives Natalie Hendricks, like, deep down? What keeps you going? What moves you forward?
I would still put curiosity number one. I think that there are just so many curiosities in the world and in our everyday life that we just ignore because we're so focused on what we're doing. So curiosity number one. And then I try to be driven by play. I think that play is a concept that we give up at some point in our life as we grow older. And play is just so essential to innovation and creativity. And even though, and I like the idea that, you know, play doesn't have a conclusion or, you know, a product or an end result that is monetizable or of value. It's just the journey of experiencing something that you enjoy. And so I try to be driven by play and keep that as, you know, a guiding light for everything that I do.
I'm obsessed. I love that. And I feel like there's something happening on the interwebs or in the space where I feel like, you know, we as a society are trying to lean more into those childlike things that we enjoy, right? Like for me, I started painting like, you know, watercolors a couple months ago, and I was like, this is incredible. And it was actually like a release of sorts, you know, and I feel like I was able to channel a different level of creativity. I'm curious, you know, when you think about like that childlike wonder and joy and leaning into that play, like if you could go back to your younger self, what advice would you give her for, you know, somebody that wants to succeed in this industry?
Whew, that's a good question.
I'm getting deep.
I think I would, let's get deep. I think I would tell my younger self to hold strong in not conforming to societal expectations. I think I went through a period where, you know, my youngest version of myself was very independent and self-guided in what I believed and how I expressed myself and the things that I liked. And then I feel like, you know, once you get middle school, high school, you really are taught to conform to these very strict boundaries of how to act and what to expect. And I think that the longer you can hold on to, you know, being guided by your true self and what you are passionate about and are interested in, no matter how cool or uncool it seems to be externally, I think that would be the advice that I give to myself and to other people who are currently still, you know, grappling with those expectations.
I love that. And I think, you know, that's advice I need to take even today. But I wish I heard that advice when I first started out in the industry. You know, I think being a woman, a young woman in the sports industry, it was nerve-wracking for me. And I felt like I had to conform, right? Like you said, I felt like I had to, you know, do little things. Like at the time I was like, I have to straighten my hair. I have to look a certain way. I have to wear certain things. And I love that that advice there, because I think it's relevant to all of us. But I'm curious, you know, as a woman in your role in this industry, what are some of the highs and lows, if any, that you've had? Like, what are some of the great things about it? And then what are some of the things that have been maybe a little bit more challenging?
I don't think anyone talks enough about how challenging it is to be a people manager. I think coming out of being an independent contributor who was responsible for myself and the things that I created, going into a position where I really am managing a group of individuals who have different needs and emotions and passions and goals, you know, it was a real learning curve to transition to putting my energy first and foremost on others rather than focusing on myself. And the things that make you a great individual contributor are not the things that are going to make you a great people manager. And so, especially during a pandemic, I think that that was the hardest learning curve to be thrown into. Just so many unknowns, as well as so much, you know, challenge in the world, but also a lot of emotions for a lot of people. And so, you know, I think I took a lot away from that. And fortunately, you know, my leadership time has coincided with getting my MBA that has a lot of rigorous classes about leadership. And sure. I was not anticipating that being as important as it has been.
That's amazing. And I feel like that, at, like you said, the timing coincides perfectly. I feel like one of the things that, you know, stands out to me is I, throughout my career, majority of my bosses, if not all of them, have been men, right? So I've looked to men as leaders, which isn't an issue by any means. Some of my, the best bosses I ever had, I mean, like I said, I think it's been all of them, but some of my favorite bosses are men. And I've learned so much from them and from leadership, but I think it is challenging sometimes, you know, and I'm currently in an individual kind of contributor role, but in my previous role, I was managing a small team and it is tough. Like you said, people, we don't talk about it enough, especially in the sports industry. I feel like a lot of times, you know, you become an individual contributor, you're a solid editor or a solid shooter cinematographer, and you rock it when it comes to the work and the execution of creating content. But then because you're so talented, you might become promoted, and then, but you don't necessarily have the skills to lead a group of people. For those that are listening and would like to maybe lead a team, what advice do you have for them? Like, you know, because you're going through it and you've been through it, and you've also, for the record, like had a pandemic to go through on top of it. So everyone's journey is different, but I'd love to hear your perspective there.
I think step one is take it seriously. You have to be really willing to reflect on yourself as a person and look for gaps in your knowledge and look for gaps in your emotional intelligence. Look at the way that you communicate and be willing to take feedback, really critical feedback from people in order to serve them better as a leader. I think that is hard. It was hard for me to do, and it's hard for a lot of people to do, to ask for people to point out your flaws. But that is absolutely what you need to be doing as a leader so that you can learn you don't take feedback well, or, you know, all of these little things that are from the perspective of the individuals who interact with you every day is so valuable. And then also just having an open platform for the people that you manage to speak candidly to you. So setting up one-on-ones, talking about their futures and their goals, you know, just being a real empathetic leader. I think that those are great first steps. And then there are obviously lots of podcasts and, you know, tutorials and all that stuff, but, you know, go to them, seek them out. Adam Grant, Work Life is a great podcast. Highly recommend that one. But if you're a people leader out there, just dig in and really try to make that as critical of a skill set as was editing or shooting. Like, really try to take it apart and learn the exact same way that you learned a technical skill, because being a leader is a technical skill.
Whoa, you better preach. I'm like, where's the Natalie Hendricks podcast coming up next? I'm excited. No, I love that. You mentioned so many incredible things there. I think I love the way you kind of expressed, break it down the way you learned your craft, right, as an individual contributor. Because it is like, people leading is not for the weak. I have learned that myself, and I've also been, you know, told that by some mentors. It is tough. But one of the things you mentioned is, you know, you listen to podcasts, and I feel like for a lot of creatives, it's hard to shut the brain off. It's hard to take a step back away from the work because The schedule's such a grind. The days and nights are very long. What are you doing when it comes to time outside of work? What are you doing for leisure?
Definitely exercise. Having a consistent exercise routine definitely grounds me on a day-to-day basis. Mm-hmm. Obviously, I'm going to school in the evenings, so I spend a lot of my extracurricular time reading and doing homework. But my partner is also getting her MBA. She's in the full-time program. So it's nice to have someone to kind of be on the same wavelength with and doing homework on the weekends. I love reading the New York Times on Sunday. We get the paper delivered, which I think is a lot of people think is like archaic.
Yes.
But I just love sitting down for hours and working my way through the New York Times. I play a couple different instruments. So pre-pandemic, I had just started a band. So maybe after graduation, we'll start back up. But any kind of creative endeavor, I have a lot of hobbies. I like to golf still. I have a screen printing press. So if we need some custom t-shirts for the podcast, we can crank those out in the basement. But just learning new things. I've picked up bouldering. There's a rock climbing gym right down the street from my house. So picked that up. You know, bought all the gear necessary for that as well. I hope to, my aspirations post-graduation are to learn to sew and to learn to play tennis. So those are on the horizon.
Wow. Okay. First of all, can I have some of what you're having for breakfast every morning? Because I'm in awe. I'm in awe of you. I feel like you can do it all. It's amazing. You mentioned, you know, exercise. For me, that's been a huge, huge part of my life. And I feel like recently, I feel like I'm at the age where I'm still kind of set in my ways, but not super set in my ways, that I want to make sure that it's a big part of my life, because I think there was a time working in the industry where, you know, the hours were so long and I would have edits to finish. And I was like, I don't have time to exercise. But, you know, some of the days where I did take the time to go for a walk or go for a run or go to this group fitness class, I would come back like re-energized even more. And, you know, being able to like take a step back and take a break, right? Mentally was super helpful. I'm curious, do you feel that way too? Like there are days where you kind of just like need to shut everything off and really channel like something completely different, so you're not thinking about work. Like, I feel like for me, I'm always thinking about like work and, oh, how can I do this? And how can this relate there? I'm curious what your thoughts are there.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, you know the industry well. I am on 24/7. If somebody needed me, I'm always available. But I think carving out that time for yourself, whether it's taking a walk during the pandemic, I went on so many walks around the neighborhood and met a lot of my neighbors that way who were also just sitting on their porch. So having that time to reconnect with your actual surroundings, especially with how much social media invades our lives. And yeah. I think it's easy to get really sucked into the virtual world and forget that you can just step right outside and, you know, there's a physical space for you to occupy and play in and, you know, see a new perspective. And so, yeah, I think trying to leave your phone behind when you have the opportunity or do something away from your electronics helps ground you in, you know, the space that you actually live in.
That's awesome. And I think, you know, even knowing you and your position with the Hawks as director of content, I think it's valuable that you're also kind of, sounds like you lead by example in a sense there, right? I think sometimes we like to emulate the people that we're around. So I love that you, you know, have that ability and are able to kind of really take a step back. I am curious, you know, and I, you know, for the folks at home, like I mentioned before, Natalie and I met several years ago. So we've had several conversations about the industry in the past, but I haven't, you know, talked to you since you've been in your new role. And like we've talked about, leading people is tough. But I think another challenge for the sports industry in general is hiring, right? And making sure that our teams are as, you know, diverse as the audiences that we serve. So I'm curious what your perspectives on hiring are for you personally, just based on your background. Because again, you have such a diverse background and an immense knowledge. How do you kind of look at hiring in the industry and within your team?
Yeah, I think valuing diversity of all types is really critical for a hiring manager and a team to understand that lived experience definitely brings a lot to the table, and representing the audience that you're speaking to, you got to have a whole group of people who know the nuance of your audience. And so making sure that you have that perspective, there are tons of good reels and there are lots of, you know, very experienced folks out there. So this just has to be another piece of that rubric that you're considering when you're looking at applications and valuing those just as highly. I also think that learning agility is something that people should be looking out for as well. So, you know, as you're interviewing these folks, sure, what have they done in the past, but how well are they able to adapt to the future that we're all going to find ourselves in? I mean, the more that you look at emerging technologies, the more that you see the rapid expansion and change of our industry specifically. So how flexible in mind and ability are the individuals that you're bringing on for hopefully a long term?
That's awesome. So it sounds like you almost, and I think this is valuable for anybody listening, but it's almost like you look for key characteristics as opposed to hard skills, right? Like I know how to edit with Adobe Premiere, or I know how to, you know, shoot this type of footage. I think that's one thing that, you know, and I've been lucky to be on some hiring panels in my previous roles. That's one thing that I really learned, that, you know, a lot of the people that are applying to these, you know, sports creative roles usually come from a sports creative background, which is kind of like expected. And if you don't have that background, you at least need to have a contact that is in the industry. But I love your perspective there, because like you said, there's so many emerging technologies. The way even like the NBA is, right, knowing how to sell products is just as valuable as knowing how to edit and tell a story, right? So I love your perspective there. I am curious, you know, being in a leadership position now with the Hawks, what is the toughest part for you personally? And how do you deal with the challenges that kind of come your way? Because we all experience hurdles and roadblocks, no matter where we work, no matter who we work with. What are some challenges and how do you get through those on a day-to-day basis?
Yeah, I think, you know, lots of challenges in such a rapid pace environment. I think for me, again, trying to approach my position from, you know, focusing my energy on the individuals on my team, it's protecting their time, their capacity, their creativity when we are in this very deadline-driven, fast-paced environment. So, you know, making sure that they don't feel burnt out by February because all of the requests have come down at the same time and they're all priority one. And, you know, there's all kinds of revisions. So trying to avoid that before it happens and being so protective of them as creative individuals and making sure that the infrastructure is there, that, you know, the burden doesn't fall on them when the requests come in. So I think that's a constant challenge and, you know, making sure that there's a balance. I'm curious to hear your perspective on this, but a balance between work that is really required by a business. You know, we are a service department servicing a business, and then balancing that with, you know, the creativity and the passion projects that, you know, everyone is bound to carve out for themselves while working in the NBA. So I'm going to turn this back on you and ask, you know, how did you balance the projects that needed to be done with the projects that you were really passionate about? Not to say that there isn't crossover there, but, you know, how did you strike that balance, or how did your team do that?
Yeah, it's a super solid question. And I think it's the push and pull that every creative has, right? Feeling like they're in between the business and their personal, you know, desires and things like that. For me, I think, and I don't know when this happened, but I had a little bit of a mental mindset shift. I would say maybe when I worked with the Detroit Pistons, you know, maybe I had like a year under my belt working with them, but I had a shift for the projects that I knew, okay, this is something that will drive business, that will help sell tickets, but I'm not feeling as passionate about it as this other piece on, I don't know, a player profile or something like that. I kind of I channeled this idea that I was servicing a client, right? So even though I worked for the Pistons and I was essentially like a Pistons team member, I looked at other departments as like, okay, the social media team or the PR team or the community team, they are my client for today. And I feel like that actually really helped me kind of take a step back from my own selfish personal views on, you know, what the video should look like or not. And that really helped. But I think you mentioned it. It's a really tricky, delicate balance of being able to, you know, do the work that you're literally hired for, which is to create content for a larger entity and organization, but also, you know, channel your creativity in some ways that is like, you know, checking off those boxes of like personal passion projects. But I think luckily, you know, especially during my time with the Warriors, we did so many different types of videos that I had a good balance. I had a healthy balance of like, okay, I gotta just knock out this video, yeah, edit here. Not super passionate about the topics, but you know, this other video is coming down the line and I'm really excited about this one. So it's definitely a challenge. And I would encourage all the folks out there not to get, I know it's way easier said than done, but And I say this because I know it's our art and it's our work and we feel attached and it's very personal to us. And I encourage people to always, you know, keep that with you, keep it close to the chest, but also remember that it's a job and you are working for a business that's bigger than yourself. So I don't know if you've kind of come into that or like, you know, had that even, you know, in all of your positions during your time with the Hawks, like have you gone through any of that? Are you able to like separate it, or do you find it kind of interests kind of merging together at this point?
I definitely feel like I can separate it. I in business school helps, like really seeing the organization from a business perspective. But even before that, I tried to do the best work for the client, whoever that was, whether it's internal stakeholders, external stakeholders, but really seeing this as, you know, a product that and a service that we're providing to someone externally. And then, you know, I can fulfill other passion projects outside of work as well that, you know, maybe scratch that itch of doing something that is wholly and uniquely mine.
That's awesome. That's amazing. And I think you said that, like having something that's wholly yours and like your baby of sorts. Have there been any projects or favorite moments or stories that you've had? And it doesn't just have to be with the Hawks, like throughout your career, that have just really stood out to you as being, you know, now looking back, these like special moments?
I think this is probably going to surprise you because it was one of the worst moments. In worst and best moments, I would say, in my career, but it was pivotal in the trajectory that I found myself on. So when I took the internship at the AJGA, when I arrived in Georgia, my first day in the office, I found out that I was flying out 2 days later to Florida and Colorado to film one of the prestigious award videos for the year. And as I had mentioned, I had never used any of the equipment or editing software to bring this together. But 2 days from then, I was headed out with my boss, the director of communications there, to execute this video. And, you know, so I did some preparation, you know, tested out the camera, figured that I'd be able to figure it out pretty much on the fly. And we got to Florida, we interviewed the recipient and her parents, and then we drove to her high school to interview her coach. And then I went outside to capture some B-roll, but I had remembered someone telling me to format the card prior to shooting. And so I formatted the card after the interviews before getting the B-roll, just to be safe.
Oh my gosh.
And pretty much immediately, you know, you get the sinking feeling. You're like, I don't really know what I just did, but I did something bad. So I looked at the media and realized that I had deleted all of the interviews that we had gotten up to that point. And we were flying out in 4 hours from that moment. And so there was, you know, obviously a sinking feeling. And then I just decided, you know, I had this moment, critical moment in my life that I could either tell my boss, who I had just met 3 days before, that I deleted everything that we had just done, or I could pretend like everything's fine, finish the day, we fly to Colorado, and then say, well, you know, when I put the card in the computer, say, oh, I don't know, it must have broken. And because no one knows, you know, media cards are suspicious that way.
Yep.
But I just took a deep, I just took a deep breath and I said, I think I deleted all of the interviews. And my boss just looked at me a little bit surprised and said, well, I guess we're just going to have to do them again. Wow. And just so calm. And that was like the most critical moment, I think, of my career, because if she had just fired me on the spot or said, you know, how could you have done this, or exploded into, you know, a fit of rage, I think that would have dissuaded me from pursuing this as a career. But I mean, seriously, a pivotal moment in my life. And so, you know, we were still at the school. We did a 5-minute interview where we got everything that we had gotten in 30 minutes and 5 minutes. We drove to the mom's office downtown on our way to the airport, got her interview, got the interview with the dad, and then got on, made it to our plane and flew off to Denver the next that night to shoot the next award video. And that night is when I really started reading the manuals. So I read the entire manual for the camera that night. And the first page, I swear, the first page says formatting the media card means you're deleting all of the media. So lesson learned there. But that was critical. And I think that has informed me as a leader. You know, I've had two people format media cards before dumping them on pretty critical projects. And had I not had that experience with a leader who was a woman, very calmly, take on the situation in a really productive way, I don't know that I would have that as a guidance for me as a people leader. So a best and worst experience during my time as a video producer.
I was going to say, I have a lump in my throat just thinking about that experience, because I think we've all been there. Like, if you haven't done that, I'm sorry, you're not living, and or you are also really, really special. So shout out to you at home for those listening. But also, like, shout out to that manager. That is incredible. And I think speaks volumes, not only about that person, but also that it was such a pivotal moment for you, and that you were able to see, right, the beauty in that moment, but also the chaos. I feel like there's a lot of lessons in that story of, right, making it work when things go wrong, because they do go wrong whether it's post-production or production, or, you know, we capture human beings, you know, that are, you know, playing a sport. That is amazing. And I feel like I am glad for you that you had that example of like calm under pressure, because I think, you know, at least for me, you know, I've been in control rooms, I've been in, you know, live production trucks for games, I've kind of seen it all. And you see the calming presence, and then you see the opposite end of the spectrum, right? The people that freak out at like any minor thing. Your story actually reminds me, and I don't know if I should go on the record sharing this, but I think it's been long. It's passed.
Share it. Enough, we need to know.
Enough time has passed that I think, I'm ready to share my moment. But I have a similar story, and it has to do when I worked with the Golden State Warriors. And, you know, we had won the championship. This was 2018. And we celebrated after, like, the team gets to celebrate. Our staff got to celebrate, but we also had work to do, right? Because we're putting out all of the content for people to and fans to follow, you know, days after the event, right? The moment it happens, hours after it happens, and then days leading up to the parade, all of that. So I was responsible to edit a short social video. And on the plane, I had started to edit, you know, pulled out my laptop, pulled out the hard drive. And on the way home, I had fallen asleep, which is normal because we didn't have that much sleep anyways. And you're super amped from all of the celebrations and just, you know, for me, it was capturing history. It was incredible. And so we got back to the office and we are about to start dumping cards and dumping the footage, copying hard drives. And my manager goes, "Hey, where's your hard drive?" And I'm like, "Oh, it's in my backpack." Go in my backpack. I'm not finding the hard drive that I had. And I'm like, I had it in my backpack, but I'm not finding it. At this point, like you had said, like your mind starts racing, like, okay, maybe I make up something about, and then I'm like thinking, did I leave it at the hotel? No, I had it on the plane. Like I was starting to work with it. Like, where is the hard drive? Could not find it. Long story short, I had left the hard drive in the back seat pocket of the plane, which was a commercial plane, which was all sorts of scary because then I'm like, some random Joe Schmo or Joanna Schmoanna is going to go in the backseat pocket and find this hard drive. And then it's going to be all this iconic Warriors footage. And then they're going to sell it to TMZ. And, you know, my mind just started racing. And I'm like, I was terrified. Long story short, we recovered the hard drive. Thank God, because folks from our basketball operations team got in touch with the commercial plane, which it was a commercial plane for staff and player families only. So I felt lucky, but it had already gone on to its next destination. So the hard drive literally went from place to place to place. Luckily, we got it back. But just like you said, you know, after that, I learned my lesson. I triple check. I actually, to this day, do not put anything in the pockets, I think, because of that experience. So like you said, we've all encountered, like, it's been our, like, worst memory, but also, like, our biggest lesson that we can turn back and now laugh at. Like, I'm grateful that both you and I are able to laugh at both of our stories, but it's that heart-dropping sensation that you described that is, like, there's nothing like it.
That is an incredible story. I am really glad that you shared it. I feel like we could start a whole podcast of just like media disasters, but I don't know if my heart could take it.
I know. That's not a bad idea. And it's funny. I ended up telling my now boss's boss about that story when we were at NAB, the annual conference in Las Vegas. And he's like, "We really need to tell this story because, you know, you could start talking about Frame.io and camera to cloud and how your footage can be, you know, backed up." And for those of you that don't know, essentially camera to cloud, and I'm totally selling a product here and I did not intend to that. But camera to cloud is, right, as soon as you're done recording, it gets uploaded to the cloud and it operates in a way like a backup. And so I think I look back and I'm like, dang, I wish I had that. But like you said, our industry is fast evolving and fast changing. And, you know, who knows down the road if we'll ever have to worry. Maybe we won't have to worry about formatting cards, or maybe there will be a way that, you know, there will be an automatic backup. I would love if that were the case so that we'd never have to worry about something like that again. But I love that.
But then we wouldn't have these good stories to tell.
That is true. That is true.
I just want to say that, you know, based like hearing your story and just thinking, you know, a takeaway for people is that always just face the problem head on.
Yes.
I cannot stress this enough that
yes.
if you just take the like swallow the big breath of air that, you know, you have and mm-hmm. just face that problem head on when you make a mistake, you're going to gain the trust of so many people around you who know that if there's a problem, that you are going to bubble it up or take it in the moment and find a solution. So please do not hide your mistakes. I think that hopefully you can take that from both of our stories, that when you tell someone straight up what happened and you learn from it, you're really going to set yourself up for success and trust in the future.
Oh yeah. I think in the moment, like I did tell my boss, I was like, I don't know where the hard drive is. I thought I had it and I straight up don't know where it is. And we all were like confused, like, where is it? And I think you're so right, right? You gain trust when you're able to just rip the Band-Aid off. It's probably going to hurt really bad when you rip it off and just, you know, tell the truth. But it will save you in the long run, because then you just, it's almost like you can get ahead of the issue and then come up with solutions faster than if you try to, like, you know, hide that you either made a mistake or that you didn't know what you were doing. Like, we all make mistakes. We wouldn't be in the jobs we are in if we didn't, you know, make them. None of us are perfect. So I love that advice there. This has been an amazing, amazing conversation. Natalie, thank you so much for your time. You are incredible. And I am so glad that we're able to share your story and your journey with the world. And for all of you guys listening out there, keep learning, like Natalie said. Thank you so much.
Karina, I appreciate it. And it's been a joy to, you know, grow our friendship over the last couple of years. And I hope that, you know, everyone listening leans into the creative community and the folks that you meet, because those are the connections and the relationships that you're going to carry with you throughout your time in this industry and even when you leave this industry.
I mean, that is incredible advice. And I think one of the things that I would love to hear your perspective on is advice to women in the industry, whether they're up and coming or aspiring to be in a role like yours or even beyond. What is your advice to women in this industry?
I think seek out mentors and friends who can champion you. Relationships are everything in the sports industry and in every industry and in society. So, you know, seek out individuals who, you know, really support you and who want you to get better. Also find people who challenge you or mentors who will give you crucial feedback. You know, I think when you show people your work, if everyone says that it's great and they have no feedback, that you probably need to find someone else who has a stronger opinion than that.
Mm-hmm.
For me, it was really critical. I thought I was really doing a great job, sent one of my favorite video pieces to one of my mentors just to show her what I had been up to. And she sent me back this long paragraph of feedback on essentially things that I should have thought of or done better. And although it was very stinging in the moment, I recognized that I had just been surrounded by people who said everything I was doing was great, but really weren't pushing me to get better. And so find those people who will give you lovingly constructive criticism that push you to grow yourself rather than just making the same quality that you have been for a long time.
I love that. And I think I'm going to tack on to what you said and echo the advice you gave about really leaning into those mentors who champion you. Hold on to those people. I mean, it is such a small industry, but there are some really special people out there that are rooting for you and cheering you on. And if you have those people around you, hold on to them. And if you're not one of those people, I encourage you to be that person for others too, because I think a lot of times we get, you know, tunnel vision into our own roles and we in our own teams and our own leagues that we forget that this is a really incredible industry and there's a lot to learn from so many different people at all levels. So I echo your advice there. And I think for me, one of the other pieces of advice that I always love to share with people is networking does not have to be your stereotypical definition of what networking is. You don't have to go to a conference to meet all of these people. Although I will share, conferences that I've been to, especially in the sports industry, have been the best thing for my career. But networking can look different for every person. It can be as simple as shooting someone a direct message on Twitter. It can be commenting with somebody that you know, follow their work on social media and sending them a really nice note and then continuing that conversation. You know, for me, I'm in a career pivot of sorts with my now role with Adobe. But my boss is somebody who I met years and years ago, right? And never thought, I always thought I would stay in sports and I always thought I would, you know, work for, you know, a league and do all these things. And so the value of networking is more than I think we realize at the all the time. And then I also want to echo one of the things that you said about feedback. I have learned that receiving feedback is key and really learning to actually receive it, not just kind of listen it in one ear and out the other, but also giving feedback is a great skill that for those of you who want to become people managers, like lean into that now. I also love the idea of like, if you're in a role now, you can still find ways within your current role to practice for your next one, right? And so really taking ownership of the jobs you have, of the skills you have, and leaning into them. I think that's my advice for any woman out there. And also like ignoring what people tell you you should and shouldn't do. Like if I could go back to my younger self, I would tell myself, don't straighten your hair, just do your thing. You know, don't like limit your persona, you know, because you're worried about how it will be. You know, you know who you are deep down. And I think leaning into that is another piece of advice I have.
I'm taking it right now. I'll take that advice.
I know. I need to take your advice. I need to take my advice. I need all the advice. We all need it out there. But Natalie, thank you so much. You are such an inspiration and we appreciate you taking the time to share your journey with us.
Karina, this has been a joy. I look forward to seeing your growth at Adobe and hope that everyone listening at least took one thing away, you know, from what we had to say today.
Well, thank you so much for making Creative Sports Podcast part of your day. We'd love to hear your thoughts, feedback, and suggestions. So pop on over to the Sports Creative Community on Slack and connect with us and your fellow creatives. If you're enjoying this podcast, we'd love it if you shared it with a friend or a coworker and leave us a 5-star rating so other people will be able to find us as well. And don't forget to subscribe so that you're the first person to catch each new episode. Remember, the world needs your voice, so keep creating.